1937 brings us eastwards along the coast from Annstown to Tramore, another place of significant over the years ministry to tourists as well as to resident parishioners. A place too where many people have chosen to live in their retirement. I suppose there's a contrast between the rather quiet beaches of Annstown and the very kind of touristy atmosphere at a particular time of the year of Tramore, with its arcades and its amusements. And of course it was famously served by, some people will remember this, up to the early 60s, by the Waterford and Tramore Railway, which brought vast numbers of visitors out to the beach in the summer. And the Waterford and Tramore Railway was unique in Ireland because it was a little line that had no physical connection to any other Irish railway, and so any rolling stock that was run on it had to be brought through the streets of Waterford in order to be put back on the line at what was called the Manor Station. Anyway, back to 1937, which of course was the year of Bunreacht na hÉireann and the new constitution, so much the work of De Valera. And it has to be said it has served us well, although of late the increasing pace of amendment suggests probably the accumulating problems of a document that is nearly a century old. But it's been a model for other countries in terms of how it articulates citizens' rights. One thinks of India, and there have been so many creative and fascinating ways in which the courts have used the constitution to require vindication of certain citizens' rights by the executive and the Oireachtas. The constitution had to be adopted, of course, by referendum, and we often forget that while 685,000 people in 1937 voted for it, 527,000 people voted against it, and it was a very strange referendum to be voting on the whole thing. I wonder why so many people voted against it. Perhaps they disliked particular details, perhaps even they disliked Dev. But referendums, which at the inception of the constitution and since became very much part of Irish political life, they can represent an appeal to, as it were, the ultimate sovereignty of the people, but they can also be crude and binary, reducing everything to a yes or no question, with the result depending on the outcome of a vote of 50% plus one. And sometimes when we have faced challenging questions by referendum, we need to cherish those who found themselves on the minority side, especially if there was a big minority in terms of a sensitive or divisive issue. Britain doesn't often do referendums, but we've seen the awkwardness of the big minority which voted against Brexit some years ago. And in this country, where we put in the pro-life amendment and then took it out again, those who favoured its removal recently should know from their own experience what it was like to be on the losing side in 1983 and be appropriately sensitive to the consciences and feelings of those who expressed their views in that way. Referendums can, as I say, be dangerous. This is very well known in Germany, where they don't have them for good reasons to do with their past. They can give rise to triumphalism. They can be easily manipulated. They can be manipulated by populism. And I suppose we are learning in Ireland that although the Good Friday Agreement envisages the possibility of a border poll where 50% plus one of the votes could redetermine the status of Northern Ireland, that would be a very dangerous path to a united Ireland if you had 49.99% of the electorate opposed to it. And this was something the late and esteemed Seamus Mallon came to know at the end of his life, and to write about, that a 50% plus one majority for a united Ireland would not be the right route to a newly modelled inclusive shared Ireland. There must be other ways. Anyway, I wonder how the views of the very many who came out and voted against the 1937 constitution subsequently evolved.